Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 569. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about beaches and gigantic waterfalls, freshwater dolphins, and favelas as we go to Brazil. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. I was pleased to get the news that we have one more person going with us to India this week. There's still time to sign up for that. More at the end of the show. But first, let's talk about Brazil. I'd like to welcome to the show Ricky Shetty from daddyblogger.com, who's come to talk to us about Brazil. Ricky, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me on your show today, Chris.
Well, it's wonderful to talk to you. You are relatively recently back from Brazil.
I wouldn't say back from Brazil because we're actually continuing to travel. We're on a one-year trip around the world. We started in the Philippines, then Hong Kong, then Dubai, then South Africa. And now we're actually focused on South America. We started in Brazil, and then we actually went up to the northeast area of South America. So the Guyanas, French Guiana, Suriname, Guyana, Trinidad. And now we're actually in Bogota, Colombia, as we're doing this interview.
Excellent. And you were there for 6 weeks, but I've asked you the difficult job of picking out the best one-week itinerary for our audience that doesn't always have 6 weeks to travel, although I understand at the end of the show you're going to tell us more about how they can have 6 weeks instead of 1 week, but we'll get to that later. So tell us a little bit about your overall itinerary and then which week you're going to focus in on for us.
So as I said, part of this one-year trip is to concentrate on South America, and obviously Brazil is the biggest country within the continent of South America. And it's also one of the most challenging to travel through. So we allocated about 6 weeks to travel ourselves. So I'll walk you through the 6 weeks that we did, and then we can definitely do a deeper dive into about a 7 day to 10 day itinerary. So we started our trip in São Paulo, which is actually the biggest city in the Southern Hemisphere. It's a massive metropolitan city, similar to something like a New York or LA or a Beijing or a Tokyo, but in the Southern Hemisphere. From São Paulo, we spent about 4 days there. We did this whole trip pretty much by bus only. We took a bus from São Paulo to Iguazu Falls. And Iguazu is the world's largest waterfalls. It is incredible. It actually brought me to tears in terms of how beautiful it was and still is and will be. And of course, if you go during the rainy seasons, the falls are much, 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 much more spectacular. So from Iguazu, we actually went down south to Porto Alegre, which is the southernmost big city in the country. There, we actually volunteered at an orphanage called Chain of Love. We love to give back when we travel, make a difference, do some volunteerism. So from there, we actually headed up the East Coast. And we pretty much stayed coastally when we traveled around Brazil. So we went to an area called Florianópolis. We rented a car and we did a loop around the island there. And then we went up to Balneário Camboriú. And apologies for our Brazilian friends who are listening to this episode because I'm probably butchering the pronunciation of the Portuguese Brazilian names. And then we went to Curitiba and then Rio de Janeiro. I think everyone in the world knows Rio de Janeiro from the World Cup, the Olympics. Really, it put it on the map. So from Rio de Janeiro, we spent about a week there. And obviously, we'll talk more about that in a few minutes. But from Rio, we went up the East Coast, stopping in Vitoria and in Salvador, which is an amazing area, which I'll recommend people go to. From Salvador, we went up further north to Recife and then Natal and then Fortaleza. And then from Fortaleza, we went to Manaus, which is the gateway to the Amazon. And I think a lot of people know the Amazon is one of the most famous attractions in Brazil. And we spent 4 days, 3 nights doing an Amazon adventure, which I highly, highly, highly encourage all of your listeners to do at some point in your life. Put it high on the bucket list. And then from the Amazon, we actually finally we flew out to French Guiana. So that was our week itinerary, Chris, all the way from the south to the north, pretty much all overland with the exception of one flight.
Okay. And then if we wanted to focus in on your favorite 7 to 10 days, where are we focusing in on?
So let's focus on the big three. I would say start in Rio de Janeiro and then go to Iguazu Falls and then finish off in the Amazon. So if we say we had 7 to 10 days, I would say started off in Rio, which is one of the world's most amazing, most beautiful cities. And in Rio de Janeiro, there's a lot to do. I think we all know the famous Christ the Redeemer statue. If you have kids as a listener, you might know the movie Rio. It's actually really well depicting the city. Everything from the Rio statue to the macaws to even like people hang gliding to the beautiful beaches of Ipanema, Copacabana. So in terms of what I would recommend doing in Rio, I would say do a minimum of 2 days, one night. And you can stay at one of the famous beaches. There's two major beaches. One is called Copacabana and the other is called Ipanema. I love references to pop culture. So I think your listeners will know the girl from Ipanema.
From Ipanema.
Yes.
She goes walking, as I understand.
She goes walking to the beach. And it was actually based on a real girl who used to walk every day from her home to the beach, to sunbathe, to relax, to play in the sand, to swim, etc. And these two guys would sit in the cafe and stare her down, and then they would actually start writing about her. Now she's actually become world famous. She has a book. She's been in several different media just because of this song. And you can actually go to the cafe where they wrote the songs.
Oh, that's funny. What is the cafe that it was written in?
Yes, it's called The Girl from Ipanema.
Okay, cafe now. Not originally the name of it. Okay, yeah.
Now it's called The Girl from Ipanema Cafe, and it's hilarious. It's about a block from Ipanema Beach. So it's very easy to go as a tourist. They definitely have tourist prices. So it's not a typical local place anymore. Now it's very tourist driven. They sell like Ipanema shirts and the lyrics, and they have a lot of articles about that girl, etc. So definitely check out Ipanema Beach. What you can do is actually rent a bicycle and go from Ipanema Beach to Copacabana Beach. You can go by bicycle, or you can actually walk, or you can take a local bus or taxi. It's only about a 15 to 20 minute walk between the two amazing beaches. So we actually rented a bicycle. I'm actually traveling with my wife and three young kids. Our daughter is 5, our son is 3, and a younger son is 1. And what we did is my wife hung out with the two kids, and I actually took my daughter on a bike ride to the other beach, and then we switched. I hung out with the baby and then my daughter and then my wife took our son on the bike ride. So I highly recommend doing something like a bike ride, doing some walking, really enjoying the beach culture of Rio de Janeiro. Obviously, make your way up to Christ the Redeemer. There's three ways to get up to Christ the Redeemer, Chris. The first way is to walk, to hike it up. And obviously, because we have young kids, we did not do that option.
That seems like that would be a fairly steep hike.
It is a steep hike. That's why we did not choose that option. It is actually the cheapest option. And also, if you like athletics and if you like fitness and if you like hiking and trekking, you can do that option. The second option is just to take a bus or a taxi up there or a private car if you end up renting one. That option isn't that great as well. The best option I would recommend is to actually take the tram. The tram goes through the forest, up the mountain, and ends up pretty much right at the top. You do have to take a couple of staircases up. There's actually an escalator. So for people who maybe are a little bit more impaired in terms of mobility, they can actually take an elevator or escalator from the tram stop to the actual Christ the Redeemer. So some tips about Christ the Redeemer. I would say go early in the morning. It's high up on a mountain. And guess what happens? The clouds start coming in. And you do not want to have a picture with Christ with clouds in the background, because the statue is white and so are clouds. So it actually doesn't make a very good picture with clouds in the background of Christ's head. So you want to have a beautiful blue backdrop and then you in the middle. You can actually do selfies, obviously, with you or with your outstretched hands, posing like you're Jesus. Or you can actually lie down on the ground, and there's actually mats where Christ the Redeemer is, and you can lie down on these mats and then take a great picture. You can just kind of visualize it, you lying down and you taking a picture upwards, and you get a great picture. And it's one of the most famous monuments in the world. So definitely get yourself a picture of Christ the Redeemer.
A couple of questions about Rio. I know you have a couple of things to do there. You said something about if you choose to rent a car. I'm guessing that renting a car in Rio is a bad idea and that you don't recommend it.
Correct, Chris. I don't actually recommend renting the car in Rio de Janeiro itself because they actually have a pretty good public transport. They have a metro, they have a bus system, taxis are fairly cheap. So you don't actually need a car in Rio. Mm-hmm. I would recommend renting a car if you're traveling around some of the other areas of Brazil. Like sure. I mentioned earlier, we rented a car in Florianópolis, which is the island. And in that place, they don't have good public transport. And it made sense to rent a car to circle the island there. But in Rio, you don't need one. I mean, if you really wanted to, you could. It's heavy traffic. There's a chance that you might get robbed and hard to find parking. The trains, the buses, and the taxis, the bikes or the walks can pretty much allow you to do Rio car-free.
And then you brought up crime. And that's something we definitely have to talk about because I would say Rio is one of the cities that actually does intimidate me a little bit. And I would say that that is in part because we have a Brazilian exchange student, a Brazilian student who is living with us right now. And she is not helping my perceptions of that. I know she says that when she's traveling around in Sao Paulo or Rio, she is carrying money in her shoes so that when somebody mugs her, she has something to give them so, because they're happier that way. You mentioned challenging at the beginning. I don't know if that was part of why you thought Brazil was challenging or if you have any perceptions about crime in Rio and good precautions you can take or things like that.
Yeah, when I mentioned challenging at the beginning, Chris, is because the country is so big. It's actually like the seventh biggest country in the entire world after sure. Russia, Canada, China, US, and a few more. But because it's so big, it's hard to navigate it and travel through it overland. And I'm an overland type of traveler. It's not that I don't like flying, but I prefer seeing the country by land if possible. I was referring more to the logistics of seeing the whole country.
Okay.
But it is difficult for other reasons. The challenge also arises because of the language. Hardly anyone speaks English there. I never want to say the word no one, because obviously there are people who speak English, but very few people speak English in the country. Even young people like teenagers and young adults, hardly anyone speaks English. I mean, everyone speaks Portuguese there. That's the other challenge. And you mentioned the safety and health challenge. In terms of safety, yes, Rio can be dangerous, but so can any other city in the world. If you live in New York and LA and Chicago, you'll probably agree, or anywhere else in a big metropolitan city. In terms of why Rio gets a bad rap, I think because of the media. So the media usually says Rio is dangerous, avoid the favelas, avoid the beaches. And partly it is true because it's not that you avoid the beaches totally, because there's literally hundreds and if not thousands of people going to beaches every day, if not every week. So people are going to beaches, but you have to just be a little bit street smart, or since you're on a beach, beach smart. How do you be beach smart? You don't walk around with a map, a big camera, jewelry. You try not to speak loudly in English. You try not to draw attention to yourself. So try to fit in as much as you can with the locals by maybe not walking around with a map, just having your map on your phone. And also not even pulling out your phone as much as you need to. There's a saying that if you need to use your phone, use it in a shop or a cafe. Don't just pull out your phone on the beach itself, because mm-hmm. someone might actually bike past you, grab your phone, and boom, goodbye iPhone, goodbye Samsung phone. There's also favela boys and maybe some favela girls who actually hang out looking to steal stuff from tourists. So what the locals do is they actually bury their stuff in the sand and then they put their beach blanket over it. That way, at least it's out of sight and therefore out of mind of potential robbers and thieves. Also avoid the beach area at night, because that's when the bad guys or the potential thieves will come out and be more active. So avoid the beach at night. Don't walk around with expensive stuff and you'll be good to go. I mean, people do get stuff stolen. And if you do, you give it to them. If you do get approached, don't make a big deal about it. Don't say no, just give it to them. And I love the idea about your homestay students saying they carry money in multiple places, because you can carry money in a money belt, in your pockets, in your shoes. And then when someone robs you, then you could probably just give them the lowest amount of money you have in the place where they think the money is, but you have backup money in other places. So that's a great tip. So hopefully that helps to be more safe when you're traveling in Rio.
The other thing I would say is, as a traveler class, we tend to gloss over a little bit in terms of, well, you could be in dangerous parts in other cities. But Rio as a city has had problems. Rio does have more violent crime than New York, for instance, especially per capita. So it's definitely a place to make sure you have your wits about you. Although I think you're right that as a tourist, your biggest risk is just having stuff stolen. And I know the beach is one place that I've definitely heard, just don't bring a lot to the beach. You're certainly not bringing a big bathing suit if you're trying to fit in. So you're not going to have a lot of pockets to fit things in. It's just good to be aware that there is crime. And in Rio, my impression is, from what I understand, that you're less likely to be pickpocketed and a little more likely to be robbed. And so just a better idea, all your suggestions of just don't make yourself a target is good. I think you had one more thing at least that you want to talk about in terms of doing in Rio.
Yeah, so I've already talked about Christ the Redeemer, Sugarloaf Mountain, and the beaches. And you can pretty much do all three in a day. If you plan well, you can actually try to check out a football game or soccer game. I mean, Brazil is obviously world famous for soccer. It's almost like a religion there. And they have a world famous stadium called Maracanã Stadium. So we actually ended up watching a local soccer game. I never know what to call it, soccer or football. For the sake of the American audience, I'll call it soccer. And for the sake of our South American friends and elsewhere in the world, I'll call it football. But anyway, we watched a football game, and it was incredible to be in the heart of a Brazilian soccer game. And it was amazing. So highly recommend checking out a soccer/football game. The other big thing I would recommend doing, Chris, is to check out a favela. So a favela is basically a slum. And the media, again, gives an incorrect perception of what a favela is. It is actually just a little town with poorer people living there, and they pretty much can do everything they need to do as you would in any town or city in the world. They have shops, restaurants, cafes. They have dentists, doctors, schools, and it's very self-contained. And it's amazing to go there and to see how the town functions. It is such a congested area, and there's so much energy, vitality, and ambience, just the colors and the people and just walking around. It is a very powerful experience to go into a favela. So I would highly recommend doing a favela tour. I wouldn't recommend just walking in there and seeing what happens because you might walk to the more dangerous area, like the gangster area, or maybe an area where you shouldn't. Do a favela tour, and there's a lot of favela tours available. We actually ended up doing a favela homestay, which was even more amazing because we got to stay with the local family. The mom cooked dinner for us, and then the sons did a walking tour on the favela with us. But obviously, we're talking about a little bit of a shorter itinerary. So I would recommend doing a 2 to 3 hour walking tour of a local favela. The one I would recommend is called Rosina, which is actually the biggest favela in the world. It's pretty special. So when I think back of our time in Rio, I definitely remember the favela experience, going up to Christ the Redeemer, and the beaches. And I would say, on the tangent, if you can actually do a soccer game, that'll be memorable as well. You just have to plan it in terms of, if you can be there on usually a Wednesday or a Sunday, that's typically when a soccer game's happening. So try and fit that in if you can. So that's 2 days in Rio, Chris.
Okay, excellent. And I just want a little caveat from what I said earlier. I was just looking at crime rates while we were talking. And the good news is in both Sao Paulo and Rio de Janeiro, in the last 15 years, they've dropped by over half or over 50% in Sao Paulo and almost 50% in Rio. So good news. Hopefully things are going to head in the right direction there. I know they've had some real tough economic problems recently, as well as some real notable corruption trials and things like that going on. Excellent. Where are we going next?
So from Rio, I would recommend checking out Iguazu Falls, which is the largest waterfall in the world. It might not be the most famous. When we think of famous waterfalls, we usually think of Niagara Falls, which is kind of straddles Canada, the U.S. Mm-hmm. We think of Victoria Falls, which is in Southern Africa. And we might think of Angel Falls, which is actually the highest waterfalls in the world in Venezuela. Mm-hmm. But in terms of biggest or largest or the most amount of water flow, it's actually Iguazu. And it is an incredible sight to behold. It is situated at the border between Argentina and Brazil. You can fly very easily from pretty much any major city in Brazil. Since we are talking about Rio to Iguazu, there are multiple flights per day. And you can go there and spend a night close to the waterfalls. The town is about 15 to 20 minutes from Iguazu, and it's called Foz do Iguazu. But Iguazu is incredible for so many reasons, and there's many different ways to visit it. You can do a tour. You can kind of do it self-guided in terms of just taking a taxi to get to the falls, and then you just walk around on your own, at your own time, enjoying the waterfalls for as little or as long as you want, and you're not limited by the tour timing. So we did it self-guided. But the other cool thing we did is we actually took a boat trip. And with the boat trip, it's pretty amazing because you can actually go underneath the waterfalls and get absolutely soaked. So take yourself a waterproof camera or even a regular camera with a waterproof case. And that's what we did. Ended up buying a waterproof case. I think it was like $5 to buy a case. You put your iPhone or some Samsung phone into it, and then boom, you do the rafting trip. you get yourself soaked. And I have amazing footage of my kids screaming and us screaming and the waterfalls drowning us. And we came out, we survived a plunge through Iguazu. So I highly recommend doing not just a walking trip around the falls, but doing a boat trip into the heart and underneath the falls itself.
Excellent. Any other recommendations on accommodations, for instance, in either Rio or in Iguazu?
Yeah, so it depends on what type of traveler you are. There's everything from really low budget to very high luxury. We're kind of in the middle. We don't do the camping or sleeping out in the middle of nowhere. We sometimes actually do hostels. They're hostels that are family friendly, that welcome kids. If you're more into just solo travel, couple travel, you can go for guest houses. They are hotels, they're resorts. So it depends on really your budget. If you're doing a 7 to 10 day trip, you probably have a higher budget than someone who's traveling long term like we are. So you can pretty much get hotels from anywhere from 40 to 50 to 100 US. And obviously, the more you pay, the better the hotels will be. They'll have breakfast included. They'll have a swimming pool and they'll have English speaking staff. The lower end hotels, the lower priced ones, will probably have Brazilian Portuguese speaking staff, which makes it a lot harder if you're a tourist from a non-Portuguese speaking part of the world, which is pretty much everywhere, with the exception of Portugal, some parts of Africa, Macau, and Brazil. Definitely recommend an English speaking establishment, which will allow you to communicate much better and make your trip much easier.
Now, you mentioned a couple of times English speaking and that being a little bit of a barrier here. And I'm guessing you or your wife speak Spanish.
In terms of do we speak Spanish, the answer is overall, no. My wife's Filipino, so actually Tagalog, which is the dialect of the Philippines, is based in Spanish, and Spaniards colonized the Philippines for about 200 years. So she has a better grasp of the Spanish language than me. I'm from Vancouver, BC, Canada, so I know English, and I don't want to say I know French, but I know some French.
Sure.
So that helps a little bit in terms of traveling around South America, because the language is based on French, Spanish. Mm-hmm. Portuguese are kind of similar. We do not know Spanish well enough to communicate with the locals.
Because I know that the second language for many people down there would be Spanish rather than English. So sometimes that would help, but that wasn't even helping you out so much. Okay.
Actually, that's incorrect, because most people in Brazil do not know Spanish. Most people know Portuguese and Portuguese and Portuguese only.
Okay.
Surrounding countries obviously are all Spanish, with the exception of the Guyanas. French Guyana is French, Suriname is Dutch, and then Guyana is English. But the rest of South America is Spanish. And Brazilians, surprisingly enough, even though they're surrounded by Spanish-speaking countries, do not know Spanish themselves.
Okay, well, then maybe it was just the people I know from Brazil who know Spanish.
Yeah, I mean, most people do and don't. I talk to a lot of locals, and they actually say that's a fault of their own educational system, is the fact that they don't teach their children English or Spanish, even though pretty much English is the universal language for communication and Spanish is where they're surrounded by. They seem to be very Portuguese-centric. So just have to go with it. You're visiting their country, and it's their country and their culture. So you have to realize, why should they learn English or why should they learn Spanish? Because it is their country and you're going there as a visitor. So it's up to us as travelers to learn their language, not the other way around.
Well, and usually what that happens is if you have a larger country like Brazil and it's got a rich media of its own, that they're making their own TV shows and movies and things like that, then there's less need to learn other languages for that sort of thing. So Brazil is a big country, a lot of people there. Excellent. And then you've got one more stop for us.
Once you finished Iguazu, I would say check out the Amazon. So I think we all know the Amazon. It's a river, it's a rainforest, it's a jungle. Mm-hmm. And the starting point for any trip to the Amazon is a town. It's actually a city because there's about 2 million people. And it's called Manaus. You can actually fly from Iguazu to Manaus, and then you could pretty much do a circle of Brazil. So I would say start in Rio, go to Iguazu, go up the Amazon, and then end off in Rio and then fly back to wherever you came from. Manaus is the base and the starting point for any and all Amazon trips. There are some other potential starting points, but I won't cover those. Those are Belém, Santarém, and also on the west side of the Amazon, you can start that direction. But Manaus is pretty much the hub, so most people do their trips from Manaus. So what you can do is everything from a one-day trip, a two-day trip, a three-day trip, a four-day trip. So early in the interview, I mentioned we did a four-day, three-night, overnight stay. And I'll just walk you through how we did it, and then I'll walk you through how you can do it for a smaller, shorter itinerary. We did 4 days, three nights. The first night was in a jungle lodge. The second night was in a homestay with a local Brazilian tribal family. And the third night was actually sleeping in a hammock in the middle of the jungle. And that was actually the most interesting, the most challenging and the most memorable, because there's not many times in your life where you're going to sleep in a jungle, in a hammock, in the Amazon. So we did it. Actually, it was just me because my wife was too scared to bring the kids into the jungle with all the mosquitoes, the spiders, the snakes, and much more. We did the first two nights together, and then I rebelliously did the jungle trip, and my wife stayed in the jungle a lot. I got bitten by mosquitoes. You actually do have mosquito nets, etc. In terms of if you're doing a shorter itinerary, the 7 to 10 day one we're talking about, I would say do 2 days, one night in the Amazon, because you don't want to just stay in the city and then go to Amazon, come back, because you don't really get a feel of the Amazon. And the Amazon really comes alive at night with the sound of the frogs, the monkeys, the crickets, all the different animals, and just the ecosystem really comes alive to a much more different degree than it happens in the daytime. So I would say 2 days, one night. Typically, an Amazon trip will include a few things. There's something called the meeting of the waters, where the Amazon River meets another Brazilian river. And there's actually two colors of the water for about 5 kilometers, a brownish color and a blackish color. And it's really phenomenal to see two different colors of water in the same river. So that's called the meeting of the waters. That's pretty cool. There's another thing you can do is swimming with the dolphins. And the dolphins are not oceanic dolphins. They are actually river dolphins. They somehow got trapped in the river through some ecological, historical occurrence. And these dolphins have actually become river dolphins. And I'd never actually seen a river dolphin ever in my life. I'd seen plenty of ocean ones. And it was really cool to see these river dolphins. They're actually not gray. They're pinkish. And so you actually can swim with the pink dolphins, which is an amazing experience. There's a local trainer who has some fish. So they kind of bribe the dolphins to come, and then they feed them some fish, and then all the tourists can take pictures. So it's kind of like tacky tourism. I apologize to my dolphin-loving friends who maybe are against that kind of activity, but your choice there, whether you want to take part in that activity or not. We like doing that because we're supporting local economy. It allows our kids to interact with the dolphins and to learn about dolphins doing something else than just visiting a typical aquarium. So we did the dolphin swimming. Also, you can visit a local Amazon tribe. Again, it's a little bit of a tourist trap. I struggle with this, Chris, because I'm more of a traveler than a tourist. But sometimes as a traveler, travelers do become tourists. And we became tourists to do the typical Amazon village experience, which is a singing and dancing. The Amazon people are dressed up in the costumes. You take pictures with them. And it's a cool experience, but it is a very touristy one. You can actually get into the heart of the Amazon. You can visit local tribes. Or you can do the typical touristy thing, which is seeing a song and dance show, pink dolphin swimming, and then doing an Amazon canoe trip. When you get to Manaus, you'll be able to organize a trip and kind of pick what's of most interest to you. So that in a nutshell is the Amazon experience. Highly recommend sleeping overnight in the jungle itself.
Now, just as contrast to talking about being a tourist, and of course, the lines between what's a traveler and what's a tourist is different for everybody, and we understand that. But you also did, you mentioned some volunteerism, which is outside of this itinerary that you're recommending. Were there opportunities like that in this area that you saw? I know you did volunteerism, I think, somewhere else in Brazil.
Yeah, there's always volunteer opportunities everywhere you go. Mm-hmm. Some of them are self-created and others are more organized before you go. Mm-hmm. Some are paid, some are free. So volunteerism is a big passion of mine. I don't like to do the paid volunteer trips. It kind of feels weird to be paying to volunteer. So I'm not a big fan of that model. I'm a fan of more organizing my own volunteer trips. So we worked with a company called SOS Children's Village. They're based out of Austria in Europe, and they have villages around the world in 100 plus countries. So we've been working with them during this Daddy Blogger World Tour, visiting different orphanages, fundraising through our site, and also teaching English and just connecting with the kids and teaching them about our country and our culture. And it also allows our kids to connect with the local kids. So we did a lot of volunteerism but we did some volunteerism in Brazil, in the south and also in the north. So actually, funnily enough, you mentioned that when we were in Manaus, we celebrated our daughter's 5th birthday in Manaus, and we actually did it in the orphanage. We had a big birthday party. Our daughter actually loved it. I mean, she has such fond memories of her 5th birthday, as opposed to just being in a hotel room and celebrating with just our family. She got to celebrate with local kids. So in terms of if you want to organize something like a volunteerism trip, first figure out what is your area of passion. Is it people? Is it kids? Is it orphans? Is it animals? Is it the environment? Once you decide on what your area of passion is, then you can pretty much go to our good friend Google and then ask Google volunteer opportunities in Rio, volunteer opportunities in in Sao Paulo, in Salvador, or any city you end up going to. Mm-hmm. And you can pretty much find a volunteer opportunity in the city. You just email them and saying, hey, we're coming on a short trip. We only have a day or half a day. Can we come in and teach English? Can we come in and do some arts and crafts? Can we come out and help in any way possible? And they'll respond saying, yes, no, maybe. And then you go from there. That's what I would recommend to doing a volunteer trip that's more self-organized.
Okay. And then getting back to the Amazon, while you were in the Amazon area, did you get to some of the national parks? Or are you mostly in the Manaus area, the immediate area around there?
We stuck to the Amazon trip because there's a lot to do just with the Amazon adventures in itself. Mm-hmm. Like I said, we did 4 days, 3 nights, and we left. We didn't do many national parks when we were in Brazil. Again, it depends on the type of travel you're doing. Because we have young kids, it's very hard for us to walk a lot. Mm-hmm. Kids are 3 and 5, and we have a baby. So my wife usually carries the baby in a sling or a baby carrier, and the other two are walking age. But the problem is they're not able to do long walks. They can do maybe an hour or even a little bit longer. Speaking of walking, we did a few walking tours in Brazil. In Rio, they have free walking tours. And in Sao Paulo, they have free walking tours. And in Salvador, they have free walking tours. And it's called a free walking tour, but there's an expectation that you leave a tip. And I mean, if you don't leave a tip, then it is technically a free walking tour. But obviously, it is good to support the locals and leave a tip. And it might be as little as 5 to 10 to 15 or 20 US dollars for a 2-hour walking trip, which I feel is a steal of a deal. And it really helps this local person who's relying fully on tips. So that's another thing if you're into walking trips. There's actually food tours as well. We didn't cover that part of Brazil, but there's amazing food in Brazil.
Well, I was surprised that we managed to get this far into the show before you mentioned Brazilian food, because it is a country that is known for its food culture.
So I was focusing more on the sightseeing element, but food is a part of sightseeing. It's called gastronomy tourism. If you are a food lover, which I think most of us are, highly recommend checking out the Brazilian food. The most famous Brazilian food, Chris, is called churrascaria. Mm-hmm. So what it is actually a restaurant or a cafe or a food establishment where they grill all types of different meat, everything from beef to mm-hmm. pork to chicken to lamb to any other type of animal you want to grill or fry or cook or boil. Again, sorry to our vegetarian-loving friends, but this is a meat establishment. And there is actually a salad option, but you won't find a lot of salad.
You're in the wrong place, though, if you're looking for... Yeah.
You're in the wrong place. You've got to find a vegetarian churrascaria. But basically, a churrascaria is they walk around with sticks of meat, and they come to your table, and you have a sign on your table saying yes or no. If you want to keep getting meat, you have the yes sign up. If you don't want, if you need a break, you put the no sign up. And what they do is the waiters, they come around and they actually slice off the meat, and then basically you just pull it with the tweezer and you put it on your plate, and you eat the different types of meat. And it's just a cool dining experience, because typically at most restaurants you don't see waiters walking around with meat on a stick slicing it for you. So it's a very unique part of Brazilian culture, and definitely highly recommend checking out churrascaria. Feijoada is the other it's kind of the national dish. Mm-hmm. Feijoada is basically fried beans with meat and kind of like a stew concoction. That's super famous. And there's also cheese balls. Pretty much they eat cheese balls anytime and every time of the day. They're kind of like a snack. So in, you know, Canada, the US, Europe, Australia, any of the Western countries, you eat French fries as a snack or potato chips mm-hmm. or candy. Well, these guys, they actually eat cheese balls. And they're so delicious. You have them for breakfast, for lunch, if you're hungry in the middle of the day in the midst of a busy sightseeing or travel itinerary, grab some cheese balls and just pop them in your mouth in the middle of the bus ride, the plane ride, or while you're waiting for taxis or buses or trains, etc.
Okay. And then expanding off to your entire trip, the biggest thing that surprised you about Brazil?
The biggest thing that surprised me about Brazil, Chris, is the fact that very few people speak English. Most of the Brazilians that I met overseas, I used to live in Sydney, Australia, and I'm from Vancouver. There are a lot of Brazilians who come there, and most of them speak English with the accent. They're probably like maybe intermediate level, or some of them are advanced, and even some are beginner. Probably when you go to Brazil is the fact that so few people speak English, which is very, very, very difficult as a tourist. Talking about like hotels, taxis, restaurants, shopping, movie cinemas, pretty much everywhere, there's no English spoken. Even when we went to museums, expecting to learn about the museum and the history of Brazil, and all the writing was in Portuguese, which is obviously very tough as a tourist visiting a museum, expecting for you to be able to read English captions. So we found it very, very difficult. So what we ended up doing is to learn a few basic phrases, like the mm-hmm. good mornings, the good afternoons, the good nights. Bom dia. the buen dias, exactly, the hellos, the thank yous, the where's the washroom, where's the train station. So maybe about 20 or 30 useful phrases. I would recommend having Google Translate mm-hmm. on your phone. You can actually get an app version, and that's offline. So you'll be able to translate offline without any internet or Wi-Fi signal. So that really helps. And also body language. At the end of the day, I think body language does a lot. People can understand when you're thirsty, you need to go to the washroom. Usually go to restaurants with pictures of food so you can actually know what you're ordering. If it's just script-based menu, then you're in trouble because you have no idea if you're ordering a weird dish or not. If you can learn the words for chicken, beef, pork, salad, drinks, tea, coffee, that would help. It is very hard to find English-speaking people. What I would recommend is trying to do that through things like meetup.com. There's always local meetups around the world. Mm-hmm. And based on your interest, you can do a local hike. You can do, I'm into Toastmasters, for example, public speaking. Mm-hmm. I'm actually Christian by faith. So you can visit a church if you're into religion. I think it's the biggest Catholic country in the entire world. Philippines, where my wife's one, is the biggest Catholic country in Asia. So when you're in Brazil, obviously there are a lot of Christians and Catholics. It's very hard to find an English-speaking church. That's a whole different story. But if you're into a faith, then you can visit a local faith establishment. Just find a way to connect with locals. I'll share with you a tip of what I did. So on Facebook, I posted that I was going to Brazil as a status update. And I said, hey, everybody, we're heading to Brazil, and we'd love to connect with some locals. If you know any local Brazilians who are living in Brazil, please tag them below. And within about 5 minutes, 10 minutes of posting the status update, I already got a few. Within a couple of days, I actually had 20 different recommendations. And we ended up meeting about 10 to 12 different local people. In all of these places I mentioned in the beginning of the interview, when we're traveling up the coast, we're able to meet locals in São Paulo, in Rio, in Salvador, in Natal, in Fortaleza, and even in Manaus. So we met a lot of local people who spoke English. So at the end of the day, travel isn't about the sightseeing, I feel. It is partially about the sightseeing. But at the end of the day, the things you remember most are the people. And we really have fond memories of our time in the orphanage in the South. We actually ended up, Chris, sponsoring a local Brazilian child. You know, we pay a monthly fee towards that. And it's not just in Canada, we could have done the same thing. But here we actually know the child that mm-hmm. we are sponsoring. And we interact him through WhatsApp and through Skype. We have regular calls with him. And we really feel like he's part of a family to some degree. So I really feel at the end of the day, travel is about the people. And if you can find ways to connect with people, you'll have a much, 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 much better experience.
We're running out of time, I'm afraid, here. So I'm going to get to my last questions. You're standing in the most beautiful spot. Where are you standing? What are you looking at?
Iguazu Falls. Looking down at the falls, it's amazing.
Cool. If you had to summarize Brazil in three words, what three words would you use?
Amazing, spectacular, and challenging.
Excellent. Where can people read more about your travels, Ricky?
Yeah, I have a website called daddyblogger.com where we write about our family adventures. We'll be traveling around South America until December of this year. So we actually summarize Brazil as a blog post. You can check that one out. Chris will put those in the show notes. Mm-hmm. I actually teach people how to become digital nomads as well. That's my big passion, is to make money while traveling. So if you're interested in that part of travel, it's called digitalnomadmastery.com. I do private coaching. I have a weekly mastermind. I have Udemy courses. I have a podcast with 100 plus episodes, and I have an online summit annually.
Okay. So if you want to do the longer trip because you want to be on the road longer, we'll go off to Ricky's site and check that out. Ricky, thanks so much for coming on the show. Again, our guest has been Ricky Shetty, and thanks for coming and sharing with us your love for Brazil.
It's funny, Chris. I never thought I would do an interview about Brazil as an Indian Canadian traveling with a Filipino wife talking about Brazil. But here we are, completed an interview just focused on Brazil. So thanks for having me on the show, and happy travels to Brazil and beyond, everyone.
In news of the community, I heard from Jeff, who wrote about the show that we did on the Seychelles. He said, just found you first with This Week in Travel, and now I've picked up your podcast. I listened to my first few driving across the Southern California desert today. I really enjoy your format and look forward to using your podcasts for future travel. I was raised in Saratoga before taking off for a 37-year career in parks. I retired last year as chief ranger at Joshua Tree National Park, so I'm always interested in national parks and World Heritage sites. I'm a member of the World Commission on Protected Areas. I've traveled the world since I was very young. Unfortunately, my wife picked up a strange illness in Africa, and now my travels are limited caring for her. On your recent Seychelles podcast, the Aldabra tortoises were mentioned. You might be interested in knowing Prison Island off Zanzibar has the rare Aldabra tortoise also. In 1919, 4 were given as a gift to Zanzibar. Now there are 125 on the island, with the oldest being 189 years old. Also had Thanksgiving on Zanzibar. It was wonderful. I listened to your Oman podcast. As you know, Zanzibar and Oman are culturally connected. What a wonderful place, and thanks for taking me back. And Jeff sent me a copy of his travel summary from his trip on U.S. government business to Oman. He says, I look forward to listening to more. If you ever need any help with parks, please let me know. Well, the great thing about Jeff's letter is it gives me a chance to thank Jeff for his service with the National Park Service. If you have not picked up on the fact that I'm a huge fan of the U.S. National Park Service and of the U.S. National Park System, then you have not been listening to the show for long, because it really is America's best idea. And I salute you, Jeff, and also all of your former colleagues with the National Park Service, because it is a really wonderful experience going to America's national parks. Remember, there's still openings for the trip to India in November of 2017. I hope you can join us. Again, I'm glad that we have one more person who signed up this week. It is, therefore, I can show you, not too late. I hope you can join us. With that, we'll end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, as Jeff did. Or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.